Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jaya Prabhupada. His divine grace of Ayacharana, the Lord of Randat Goswami Maharishila Prabhupada Jai. Iskan founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Param Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidvaita Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Shyamakunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Maturam Ki Jai Jagannatha Swami Ki Jai Yamunamai Ki Jai Srimati Lassi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Srinivadi Paschacha Deja Tarani. So we're going to continue with our study of the Krishna book. And right now we are reading about Krura, the most cruel person, going to Vrindavan to get Krishna to take him to Mathura. And actually, it's a good idea, and it's a bad idea. It's a good idea because in this way Kamsa can be killed. But it's a bad idea because the residents of Vrindavan will be bereft of the association of Krishna. But on the other hand, when they're experiencing the mood of vipralamba, separation from Krishna, that mood is a higher ecstasy. So in one sense you could say it's a bad idea, in another sense you could say it's a good idea, depending on whose perspective you're taking. But the gopis don't think it's a good idea. They think it's a very bad idea. But at the same time, because they're feeling or going to feel intense separation from Krishna, they get connected more with Krishna. Because Krishna is present, what? In his holy name. Krishna is present in his pastimes. Krishna is present in his holy dham, his paraphernalia. So we can associate with Krishna in this way. And of course, the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they always associated with Krishna in this particular way. Hey Radhe Braja Devike, Hey Nanda Shuno Kuta. Oh Krishna, oh Radharani, oh Krishna, of course, Nanda Suto, I'm Suta. Where are you? And they were running around Vrindavan in that mood, according to Srinivas Acharya, looking for Krishna. And in that mood, this very intense connection. Okay, on that happy note, let us go on. So Om Ganati Miranda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So let's share the screen so we can all read along with each other. And let's go. Whoops. So, share the screen. Oh, here it is. Okay, we're in the middle of this chapter. This is chapter, let's see what's in, I think it's 38. Yeah, it's 38. Middle of chapter 38, talking about Akrura arriving in Vrindavan. And the last paragraph we read, Prabhupada said, the process of going to Vrindavan is shown by Akrura. In other words, what is that process? Shuddhabhi mana. One has to have a purified mind. That means no anarthas. It's not, as Prabhupada said, that you can go to Vrindavan by purchasing a ticket. You have to have the purified mind, purified consciousness, then Vrindavan is revealed to you. When Akrura entered Vrindavan, he saw Krishna and Balaram engaged in supervising the milking of the cows. Krishna was dressed in yellow garments and Balaram in bluish. Akrura also saw that their eyes were exactly like the beautiful lotus flower that grows during the autumn season. He saw Krishna and Balaram in the spring of their youth. Although they had the same bodily features, Krishna was blackish in complexion, whereas Balaram was whitish. Both were the shelter of the goddess of fortune. They had well-constructed bodies, beautiful hands, and pleasing faces, and they were as strong as elephants. Now, after seeing their footprints marked with flag, trident, thunderbolt, and lotus, Akrura actually saw Krishna and Balaram face to face. Although they were the most influential personalities, they were glancing at him with smiling faces. Akrura, why was that? Even though they were so influential, because Akrura had bhakti. Of course, later on he gets cursed by the gopis. Akrura could understand that both Krishna and Balaram had returned from tending cows in the forest. They had taken their baths and were dressed with fresh clothing and garlanded with flowers and with necklaces made of valuable jewels. Their bodies were smeared with a pulp of sandalwood. Akrura greatly appreciated the aroma of the flowers and sandalwood and their bodily presence. He considered himself very fortunate to see Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his plenary expansion, Balaram, face to face, for he knew that they were the original personalities of the creation. So plenary means on the same plane. Krishna and Balaram are non-different. They're both the same people, persons, and they just look different. And Krishna can do that. He can be in unlimited places, as we've stated many times. At the same time, unlimited places, doing all sorts of different things. As stated in the, and even interacting with himself, like Krishna interacts with Balaram, Ram interacts with Lakshman, Bart, and Shatrughna. And they're the same person. As stated in the Brahma Sanghita, Krishna is the original personality of Godhead and the cause of all causes. Akrura can understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had appeared personally for the welfare of his creation to reestablish the principles of religion and to annihilate the demons. With their bodily effulgence, the brothers were dissipating all the darkness of the world as if they were mountains of sapphire and silver. Without hesitating, Akrura immediately got down from his chariot and fell flat just like a rod before Krishna and Balaram. Upon touching the lotus feet, wow, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he became overwhelmed with transcendental bliss. His voice choked up and he could not speak. Due to his transcendental pleasure, incessant torrents of tears fell from his eyes. He remained stunned in ecstasy as if devoid of all powers to see and speak. Lord Krishna, who is very kind to his devotees, raised Akrura with his hand and embraced him. It appeared that Lord Krishna was very much pleased with Akrura. Balaram also embraced Akrura. Then the two lords took him by the hand and brought him to their sitting room, where they offered him a very nice sitting place and water for washing his feet. So even though Krishna is God, he respected the culture, you know, older person, like that. So Krishna always, just like when Sudama Brahman came to see Krishna, Krishna sat him on his bedstead and had Rukmini fan him, and Krishna bathed his feet. It's a very important item of etiquette. They also worshipped him with a suitable presentation of honey mixed with the other ingredients. When Akura was thus comfortably seated, Krishna and Balaram offered him a cow in charity, and then brought very palatable dishes, and Akura accepted them. When Akura finished eating, Balaram gave him betel nut and spices, as well as the pulp of sandalwood, just to make him more pleased and comfortable. The Vedic system of receiving a guest was completely observed by Lord Krishna himself to teach all others how to receive a guest at home. It is a Vedic injunction that even if a guest is an enemy, he should be received so well that he does not apprehend any danger from the host. If the host is a poor man, he should at least offer a straw mat as a sitting place and a glass of water to drink. Krishna and Balaram welcomed Akura in a way just befitting his exalted position. So, of course, you also have that example of Jarasandha dealing with his three guests, Krishna, Bhimsena, and Arjuna. And apart from the fighting which they did during the day, at night they would just eat together and joke together as different kshatriyas. You know, it's really interesting how there's etiquette and there's certain times for doing things, just like during the Battle of Kurukshetra was originally decided that there would be no fighting at night. So everything was just based on etiquette. Of course, later on, the Kurus violated that, and then when they violated that, Bhimsen had to call for Gato Kach to take care of them at night. And then ultimately, Karna had to fire this dart that he received from Indra to kill Gato Kach, and actually that was Gato Kach's service to Krishna and Arjuna. So he took this dart, instead of the dart which was originally meant for Arjuna, he took it to himself and saved Arjuna. After Akura was thus properly received and seated, Nanda Maharaj, the foster father of Krishna, said, "My dear Akura, what shall I inquire from you? I know that you are being protected by Kamsa, who is most cruel and demoniac. His protection is just like the slaughterhouse keeper's protection of animals he will kill in the future. Kamsa is so selfish that he has killed the sons of his own sister. So how can I honestly believe that he is protecting the citizens of Mathura?" This statement is most significant. If the political or executive heads of the state are simply interested in themselves, they can never look after the welfare of the citizens. Sounds familiar. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Okay. So, as Nanda Maharaj spoke to Akura with pleasing words, Akura forgot all the fatigue of his day's journey from Mathura to Vrindavan. So thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 38th chapter of Krishna, Akura's arrival in Vrindavan. So that's the second half of 38 we read today. Now we're going to go on to 39. So these are heart-wrenching stories. Akura's return journey and his vision of Vishnu Loka within the Yamuna River. Akura was warmly received by Lord Krishna and Nanda Maharaj, and offered a resting place for the night. In the meantime, the two brothers, Balaram and Krishna, went to take their supper. Akura sat on his bed and began to reflect that all the desires he had contemplated while coming from Mathura to Vrindavan had been fulfilled. Lord Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune. Being pleased with his pure devotee, he can offer whatever the devotee desires. But the pure devotee does not ask anything from the Lord for his personal benefit. After taking their supper, Krishna and Balaram came to bid good night to Akura and asked him how Kamsa was dealing with their friends and relatives. Krishna then inquired into Kamsa's plans. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then informed Akura that his presence was very welcome. Krishna inquired from him whether all their relatives and friends were well and free from all kinds of ailments. Krishna stated that he was very sorry that his maternal uncle Kamsa was the head of the kingdom. He said that Kongsa was the greatest anomaly in the whole system of government, and then they could not expect any welfare for the citizens while he ruled. Then Krishna said, "My father has undergone much tribulation simply for my being his son. For this reason also, he has lost many other sons. I think myself so fortunate that you have come as my friend and relative, my dear uncle Akrura. Please tell me the purpose of your coming to Vrindavan." That's interesting how Krishna actually obviously understood that Vasudeva was his father. After this inquiry, Akura, who belonged to the dynasty of Yadu, explained that the recent events in Mathura, including Kamsa's attempt to kill Vasudeva, the father of Krishna, he related all the things which had happened after the disclosure by Narada that Krishna was the son of Vasudeva, hidden by Vasudeva in the house of Nanda Maharaj. Akura narrated all the stories regarding Kamsa. He told how Narada had met Kamsa and how he himself was deputed by Kamsa to come to Vrindavan. Akrura explained to Krishna that Narada had told Kamsa all about Krishna's being transferred from Mathura to Vrindavan just after his birth and about his killing all the demons sent by Kamsa. Akrura then explained to Krishna the purpose of his coming to Vrindavan to take him back to Mathura. After hearing of these arrangements, Balaram and Krishna, who are very expert in killing opponents, mildly laughed at the plans of Kamsa. They immediately informed Nanda Maharaj that Kamsa had invited all the coward men and boys to go to Mathura to participate in the ceremony known as Dhanuryagya. Dhanur means, of course, a bow. Yagya means a sacrifice. Whoops, let me just do something on the screen here. I just want to keep the chat window open in case there's a problem. Forgot to do that. All right, so Krishna, Kamsa wanted them all to go there to participate in the function. On Krishna's words, Nanda Maharaj at once called for the coward men and asked them to collect milk and all kinds of milk products to present to the king in the ceremony. He also sent instructions to the police chief of Vrindavan to tell all the inhabitants about Kamsa's great Dhanuryagya function and invite them to join. Nanda Maharaj informed the coward men that they would start the next morning. They therefore arranged for the cows and bulls to carry them all to Mathura. When the gopis heard that Akrura had come to take Krishna and Balaram away to Mathura, they became overwhelmed with anxiety. Some of them became so aggrieved that their faces turned black, and they began to breathe warmly and had palpitations of the heart. They discovered that their hair and clothes immediately loosened. Hearing the news that Krishna and Balaram were leaving for Mathura, others who were engaged in household duties stopped working as if they had forgotten everything, like a person who is called forth to die and leave this world at once. Others immediately fainted due to separation from Krishna. Remembering his attractive smile and his talks with them, the gopis became overwhelmed with grief. They all remembered the characteristics of the personality of Godhead, how he moved within the arena of Vrindavan, and how with joking words he attracted all their hearts. Thinking of Krishna and of their imminent separation from him, the gopis assembled together with heavily beating hearts. They were completely absorbed in thought of Krishna, and with tears falling from their eyes, they spoke as follows. O Providence! Actually, we're dealing with this particular part of the Bhagavatam in Bhagavatam class, because this is actually from the Bhagavatam. So Providence is another form of Krishna. And I explained when I was giving the class a few days ago that Providence can be equated with the time factor. And as Krishna says in the Gita, Kalo Asmi, he said, I am time. And I've come to basically to kill everybody. And also, Mrityu Sarva Harashcham, I am all devouring death, which is actually a manifestation of the time factor. So, O Providence, you know, in one sense that's Krishna, and a manifestation of Krishna. You are so cruel. It appears that you do not know how to show mercy to others. By your arrangement, friends contact one another, but before they can fulfill their desires, you separate them. This is exactly like a child's game that has no meaning. It is very abominable that you arrange to show us beautiful Krishna, whose bluish curling hair beautifies his broad forehead and sharp nose, and who is always smiling to minimize all grief in this material world, and then arrange to separate him from us. Oh, Providence, you are so cruel. But most astonishingly, you appear now as a Krural, which means not cruel. In the beginning, we appreciated your workmanship in giving us these eyes to see the beautiful face of Krishna. But now, just like a foolish creature, you are taking away our eyes by not letting us see Krishna anymore. Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, is also very cruel. He must always have new friends. He does not like to keep friendship for a long time with anyone. We gopis of Vrindavan, having left our homes, friends, and relatives, have become Krishna's maidservants. But he is neglecting us and going away. He does not even look upon us, although we are completely surrendered unto him. Now all the young girls of Mathura will have the opportunity. They are expecting Krishna's arrival, and they will enjoy his sweet, smiling face and drink its honey. Although we know that Krishna is very steady and determined, we are afraid that as soon as he sees the beautiful faces of the young girls of Mathura, he will forget himself. We fear that he will become controlled by them and will forget us, for we are simple village girls. He will no longer be kind to us. We therefore do not expect Krishna to return to Vrindavana. He will not leave the company of the girls in Mathura. Now, there's several things going on here. As far as providence, as it is applied to ordinary persons in this material world, it acts exactly like that. It separates people. People meet for some time, and I gave the example in class that we can be compared to pieces of seaweed. Let's say we have different family relationships, country relationships, village relationships, you know, all these different, and then, just like the pieces of seaweed sometimes float together, and then they float and they go to opposite ends of the ocean. And these pieces of seaweed, other than ourselves, we, or the Bhagavatam, considers to be like fallible soldiers. We think we can take shelter of these pieces of seaweed, and we have some eternal relationship. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, we do have an eternal relationship with our spiritual master, and with the other devotees who go back to home, back to Godhead. Like Prabhupada said, we will have an ISKCON in the spiritual world. So we won't be bereft. Of course, we will look differently. It's not that because you have a male body or female body or you're a certain age, of course, ages change. I certainly wouldn't want my body eternally. Oh my God. Eternally an old guy. So anyway, you look differently. You have a spiritual body composed of Sat, Chit, and Ananda, and you are the body. There's no duality. Duality means there's a difference between the soul and the body, but in the spiritual world, the soul is the body is the soul. The gopis began to imagine the great functions in the city of Mathura. Krishna would pass through the streets, and the ladies and young girls of the city would see him from the balconies of their respective houses. Mathura city contained different communities known as then as Dashaha, Bhoja, Andaka, and Satvata. All these communities were different branches of the same family in which Krishna appeared, namely the Yadu dynasty. They were all expecting the arrival of Krishna. It had already been ascertained that Krishna, who was the resting place of the goddess of fortune and the reservoir of all pleasure and transcendental qualities, was going to visit Mathura city. The gopis then began to condemn the activities of Krura. They stated that he was taking Krishna, who was more dear than the dearest to them, and who was the pleasure of their eyes. He was being taken from their sight without their being informed or solaced by Akrura. Akrura should not have been so merciless, but should have taken compassion on them. The gopis went on to say, the most astonishing feature is that Krishna, the son of Nanda, without consideration, has already seated himself on the chariot. From this it appears that Krishna is not very intelligent. Yet he may be very intelligent, but he is not very merciful. Not only Krishna, but all the coward men are so callous that they are already yoking the bulls and calves for the journey to Mathura. The elderly persons of Vrindavan are also merciless. they do not take our plight into consideration and stop Krishna's journey to Mathura. Even the demigods are very unkind to us. They also are not impeding his going to Mathura. The gopis pray to the demigods to create some natural disturbance, such as a hurricane storm or heavy rainfall, so that Krishna could not go to Mathura. They then began to consider, despite our parents and guardians, we shall personally stop Krishna from going to Mathura. We have no alternative but to take this direct action. Everyone has gone against us to take Krishna from our sight. Take away Krishna from our sight. Without him, we cannot live for a moment. The gopis thus decided to obstruct the passage through which the chariot of Krishna was supposed to pass. They began to talk among themselves. We have passed a very long night, which seemed only a moment, engaged in the rasa dance with Krishna. We looked at his sweet smile and embraced him and talked with him. Now, how shall we live, even for a moment, if he goes away from us? At the end of the day and the evening, along with his elder brother Balaram, Krishna would return home with his friends. His face would be smeared with the dust raised by the hooves of the cows, and he would smile and play on his flute and look upon us so kindly. How shall we be able to forget him? How shall we be able to forget Krishna, who is our life and soul? He has already taken away our hearts in so many ways throughout our days and nights, and if he goes away, there is no possibility of our continuing to live. Thinking like this, the gopis became more and more grief-stricken at Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. They could not check their minds, and they began to cry loudly, calling the different names of Krishna. Oh, dear Damodar, dear Madhava. The gopis cried all night before the departure of Krishna. As soon as the sun rose, Akrura finished his morning bath, got on the chariot, and started for Mathura with Krishna and Balaram. Nanda Maharaj and the coward men got up on bullock carts after loading them with big earthen pots filled with yogurt, milk, ghee, and other milk products, and then they began to follow the chariot of Krishna and Balaram. In spite of Krishna's asking the gopis not to obstruct their way, they all surrounded the chariot and stood up to see Krishna with pitiable eyes. Krishna was very much affected upon seeing the plight of the gopis, but his duty was to start for Mathura, for this was foretold by Narada. Krishna therefore consoled the gopis. He told them they should not be aggrieved. He was coming back very soon after finishing his business, but they could not be persuaded to disperse. The chariot, however, began to head west, and as it proceeded, the minds of the gopis followed it as far as possible. They watched the flag on the chariot as long as it was visible. Finally, they could see only the dust of the chariot in the distance. In other literatures, like the Ananda Vrindavan Champu, it describes that when Krishna and Kurara and Balaram were on the chariot, and the gopis actually tried to block the way, and the chariot had to zigzag through the gopis to avoid running any of them over. The gopis did not move from their places, but stood still until the chariot could not be seen at all. They remained standing still as if they were painted pictures. All the gopis decided that Krishna was not returning immediately, and with greatly disappointed hearts, they returned to their respective homes. Being greatly disturbed by the absence of Krishna, they simply thought all day and night about his pastimes, and thus derived some consolation, because when you think about Krishna's pastimes, you're connected to Krishna. The Lord, accompanied by Akrura and Balaram, traveled in the chariot with great speed toward the bank of the Yamuna. Simply by taking a bath in the Yamuna, anyone can diminish the reactions of his sinful activities. Krishna and Balaram took their baths in the river and washed their faces. After drinking the transparent, crystal-clear water of the Yamuna, they took their seats again on the chariot. The chariot was standing underneath the shade of big trees, and the two brothers sat down there. Akrura then took their permission to also take a bath in the Yamuna. According to Vedic ritual, after taking a bath in a river, one should stand at least half submerged and murmur the Gayatri Mantra while he was standing in the water, in the river. Akrura suddenly saw Krishna and Balaram within the water. He was surprised to see them there because he was confident that they were sitting on the chariot. Confused, he immediately came out of the water and went to see where the boys were. And he was very much surprised to see that they were sitting on the chariot as before. When he saw them on the chariot, he began to wonder whether he had mistakenly seen them in the water. He therefore went back to the river. This time he saw not only Krishna Balaram, but many of the demigods and all the siddhas, charanas, and gandharvas. They were all bowing down before the Lord. He also saw Lord Sheshanaga with thousands of hoods. Lord Sheshanaga was covered with bluish garments, and his necks were all white. The white necks of Sheshanaga appeared exactly like snow-capped mountains. On the coiled lap of Sheshanaga, Krishna was sitting very soberly with four hands. His eyes were like the reddish petals of the lotus flower. In other words, when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, he doesn't leave Vrindavan in his original form. He leaves Vrindavan in his Vasudev expansion with four hands. Of course, when he does get to Mathura, he hides those extra two hands. So he appeared as he did in Vrindavan. Not exactly the same, because it's an expansion. Krishna expands in his original form, even though he's not manifest, at least externally to the gopis and others. Krishna always remained in his unmanifest form in Vrindavan, a prakata form. In other words, after returning to the Yamuna, Akrurasura, Balaram turned into Seshanag, and Krishna turned into Mahavishnu. He saw the four-handed Supreme Personality of Godhead smiling very beautifully. The Lord was very pleasing to all and was looking toward everyone with a merciful glance. He appeared beautiful with his raised nose, broad forehead, attractive ears, and reddish lips. His arms, reaching to his knees, were very strongly built. His shoulders were high. His chest was very broad, and his neck was shaped like a conch shell. His navel was very deep, and his abdomen was marked with three lines. His hips were broad and big, resembling those of a woman, and his thighs resembled the trunks of elephants. The other parts of his legs, the joints and lower extremities, were all very beautiful. The nails on his feet were dazzling, and his toes were as beautiful as the petals of a lotus flower. His helmet was decorated with very valuable jewels. There was a nice belt around his waist, and he wore a sacred thread across his broad chest. Bangles were on his hands and armlets on the upper portion of his arms. He wore bells on his ankles. He possessed dazzling beauty, and his palms were like lotus flowers. He was further beautified by the different emblems of the Vishnu Murti, the conch shell, club, disc, and lotus flower, which he held in his four hands. His chest was marked with the particular signs of Vishnu, and he wore fresh flower garlands. All in all, he was very beautiful to look at. Akrura also saw his lordship surrounded by intimate associates like the four Kumaras, Sanaka, Sananda, Sananda, and Sanat Kumar, and other associates like Sunanda and Nanda, as well as demigods like Brahma and Lord Shiva. The nine great learned sages were there, and also devotees like Pallad and Narda and the eight Vasus. All were engaged in offering prayers to the Lord with clean hearts and pure words. After seeing the Transcendental Personality of Godhead, Akrura immediately became overwhelmed with joy and great devotion, and all over his body there was transcendental shivering. Although for the moment he was bewildered, he retained his clear consciousness and bowed down his head before the Lord. With folded hands and faltering voice, he began to offer prayers to the Lord. So thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 39th chapter of Krishna, Akrura's return journey and his vision of Vishnu Loka within the Yamuna River. So we did 38b and 39, and I think we have a few minutes to go to chapter 40. Chapter 40 is called Prayers by Akrura. Akrura offered his prayers as follows. My dear Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the supreme cause of all causes and the original inexhaustible personality, Narayana. From your navel, lotus flower grows, and from that lotus, Brahma, the creator of this universe, is born. Since Brahma is the cause of this universe, you are the cause of all causes. The elements of this cosmic manifestation, earth, water, fire, air, ether, ego, and the total material energy, as well as nature, the marginal energy, the living entities, the mind, the senses, the sense objects, and the demigods who control the affairs of the cosmos are all produced from your body. Of course, that's the description of the Mahavishnu. The Mahavishnu breathes out, and all the universes come from his mouth and from the pores of his body, and they expand. And what's being described here is the universes, and also the living entities are his parts and parcels. Mamivamsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manasakshtani intriyani prakriti stani karshani, and they're called the marginal energy or tatashta shakti, which means the same thing. You are the supersoul of everything, but no one knows your transcendental form. Everyone within this material world is influenced by the modes of material nature. Even demigods like Lord Brahma, being covered by the influence of material nature, do not exactly know your transcendental existence beyond the cosmic manifestation of the three modes of material nature. Great sages and mystics worship you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original cause of all living entities, all cosmic manifestation, and demigods. They worship you as all-inclusive. Some of the learned brahmanas also worship you by observing Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. They offer different kinds of sacrifices in the names of different gods. And there are others also who are fond of worshiping transcendental knowledge. They are very peaceful, and after giving up all kinds of material activities, they engage in the sacrifice known as Jnana Yajna, the sacrifice of knowledge, the philosophical search for you. There are also devotees known as Bhagavats, who worship you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After being properly initiated in the method of Pancharatra, they decorate their bodies with tilak and engage in worshiping your different forms of Vishnumurti. So the Pancharatra, or Pancharatriki Vidhi, is meant for basically training one up to worship the deity in the temple. So, of course, Narada Muni is the author of the Narada Pancharatra, and there's many details there as far as worshiping the deity in the temple, the forms of Vishnumurti. There are others also known as Shaivites, followers of different acharyas, who worship you in the form of Lord Shiva. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that worship of demigods is also indirectly worship of the Supreme Lord. Krishna says, but it's avidhi purvakam. It's the wrong path. But such worship is not orthodox, because the worshipable Lord is the Supreme Personality, Godhead Narayan. Demigods such as Brahma and Shiva are incarnations of the material qualities, which are also emanations from the body of Narayana. Actually, there was no one existing before the creation except Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The worship of a demigod is not on the same level as worship of Narayan. And of course, there's that famous verse I've quoted many, many times. Yastu Narayanam Devam, Abramarudradi Daivatasamitpayanayava Viksheta, Sapashandi Bhavetruvam. One who considers the demigods, like Brahma and Shiva, to be equal to or independent of Vishnu, that person is a Pashandi, which means atheist or outcast. Akura said, although the minds of those who are devotees of the demigods are fixed on a particular demigod, because you are the supersoul of all living entities, including the demigods, worship of the demigods indirectly goes to you. Sometimes, after flowing down from the mountains during the rainy season, small rivers fail to reach the sea, some reach the sea and some do not. Similarly, the worshippers of the demigods may or may not reach you. There is no guarantee. Their success depends on the strength of their worship. And Krishna Lagita also says that, you know, if one desires to worship a particular deity, then Krishna makes that person's faith strong. It's interesting. Because Krishna's reciprocating, yayatamam prapajate tam sataiva bhajamiham, with one's desires as a super soul. He gives one intelligence, matakshmitir, jnanamaponam cha, and gives one faith according to your desire. So basically, we should have a desire to worship and serve the Supreme Personality of God. And then Krishna says, what tadami buddhi yogam tam? Yenamam upiyantate. I will give you intelligence how you can come to me. According to the Vedic principles, when a worshipper worships a particular demigod, he also conducts some ritual for Narayan, Yajneshwara. For, as it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, the demigods cannot fulfill the desires of their worshippers without the sanction of Narayan or Krishna. The exact words used in the Bhagavad Gita are mayaiva hitan hitan, which means that the demigods can award some benediction after being authorized by the Supreme Lord. When a demigod worshiper comes to his senses, he can reason as follows. The demigods can offer benedictions only after being empowered by the Supreme Lord, so why not worship the Supreme Lord directly? Such a worshiper of the demigods may come to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but others who take the demigods as the all and all cannot reach the ultimate goal. So one should understand that Krishna says, Aham Adirahi Devanam, I'm the source of all the demigods. Nityam Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitanam Eko Bahunam Yobadavati Kamam. I'm supplying and maintaining all the living entities, which includes the demigods. Demigods are like Krishna's cabinet, like the president or prime minister. They have cabinet members, and these cabinet members assist the president or prime minister. That's all. And they're jiva souls, like you and me, except for Lord Shiva is a special category, and they assist the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead doesn't have to get his hands dirty by touching the material energy. It's described that Krishna never touches the material energy. In fact, his impregnation of the living entities within the material energy is done through his glance. Okay, Karora continued to pray. My dear Lord, the whole world is filled with the three material modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. Everyone within this material world is covered by these modes, from Lord Brahma down to the non-moving plants and trees. My dear Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, because you are beyond the influence of the three modes. Except for you, everyone is being carried away by the waves of these modes. That's what Bhagavad Gita says. Everyone's forced to act helplessly. My dear Lord, except for pure devotees, my dear Lord, fire is your mouth, the earth is your feet, the sun is your eye, the sky is your navel, and the directions of your ears, this universal form. Space is your head, the demigods are your arms, the oceans and seas are your abdomen, and the winds and air are your strength and vitality. All the plants and herbs are hairs on your body, the clouds are the hair on your head, the mountains are your bones and nails, the days and nights are the blinking of your eyelids. Prajapati, the progenitor, is your genitals, and the reins are your semen, or semen. So, in other words, this is not Krishna's personal body. This is a manifestation called universal form, in which people can come to the point of understanding God is great. I remember when I was a young person, way before I became a devotee, I would sometimes camp out at night and look up in the sky. And as I looked up in the sky, I saw all the clouds and stars and planets. Of course, I didn't see them all, but I saw the ones that were visible. And as I looked up there, I just looked at the great expanse of the Lord's creation, and I thought, wow, God is great. So that's really the point. Before you can actually approach God in an intimate way, you have to understand the greatness of God. And that's why when we read the Bhagavatam, we start with what? The first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which establishes Krishna's position. That's first and second canto, establishes Krishna's ontological position. Okay, very good. And so we'll end here today. Continue tomorrow, and let us stop sharing and allow you all to ask questions if you want to ask questions. All right, so if you want to ask a question, you can unmute yourself. You can raise your hand, and then I will call on you. Or you can type in the text window here. So, Abhay Chaitanya, you're first.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev, Dhanavar Pranam. Please accept my respectful obeisances.
Blessings, good to hear from you. So, do you have a question?
Yes, Gurudev. Thank you for the beautiful class there. Just a question about Akrur, Prabhu. Sorry, Maharaj. Akrur, you know, has been so fortunate to actually have the, you know, the vision of Krishna and Anantashesh and all that. So he's obviously very fortunate to have that.
Oh, yes.
However, in the future, we see that, you know, in the pastimes of the semantic jewel, the gem, when it was stolen, we see that Akrur has hidden that as well, and he's sort of, you know, complicit in that act. And so just trying to understand that even after he's had this great realization that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how is he still succumbed to something like that, Maharaj?
Well, two answers to that. First of all, it's a pastime. Second of all, it's because he was cursed by the gopis. Because
right.
The gopis were so... Remember, we read that the gopis said, your name is Akrur, but actually you're not... You are cruel, you're not uncruel. And so the gopis were very upset. And because he offended the gopis, that's why he got caught up in sinful activities.
Okay. Okay, got it.
And also it's a pastime, too. You know, anyway, there's two ways, the two levels... that we can explain this at.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Gurudev.
Hi, thank you for your nice question. I believe Rishikesh had a question, but I didn't see him.
That's Gurudev.
Okay.
Listen to me. I was just wondering, Gurudev, you know, this, when Akura took Krishna back to Mathura, seems that his friends, Krishna's friends, didn't feel that much pangs of separation compared to gopis.
Well, the friends, many of the coward boys went there.
Okay.
See, remember it's described that Nanda Maharaj and everybody hooked up all the cows and bulls and everything like that, and they were following Akrura's cart.
But when they came back to Vrindavan, his friends...
Everybody came back to Vrindavan.
But did they feel the same separation? No.
Not to the intensity that the gopis experienced, but yes, they were experiencing separation. I mean, there's a description about Mother Yashoda, she just acted like an addled or crazy person because Krishna didn't come back. And she spoke, you know, in a way that appeared that she, and I'm sure the coward boys too, appeared in a way that they were actually crazy. But they, of course they weren't crazy. That's called Divyanmada. Divyanmada means transcendental madness. And the gopis, of course, exhibited that to the highest degree, but all the residents of Vrindavan. It's even described that when Krishna would go out, when he was in Vrindavan, to pasture the cows, Yashodamaya would have these intense feelings of separation and try to follow him and just ask him to come back and everything like that. So yes, they all experienced intense separation from Krishna. However, because the gopis are on the topmost platform of devotional service, then they are quoted in this particular instance more than the other residents of Vrindavan, and also because many of the other residents of Vrindavan, the men at least, not the women. Yeah, so actually Gopal said, he said, Srinam was so bereft he took shelter in a cave for 4,000 years. Okay, so that's it, Rishikesh? Yeah, thank you.
Let's go there. Yeah, thank you.
Here's another point, a question. Coward friends, some expansions of Krishna, they're generally jiva souls. Eternally liberated. Some were eternally liberated, just like with the gopis. Some were, I mean, of course, some of the gopis were Shaktis, and some of the gopis were eternal Nitya-siddha devotees, that means eternal devotees, and some of them were Sadhana-siddha devotees. Just like we talked, when we were reading about the Rasa dance, we talked about the sages at Dandakaranya, who were attracted in a conjugal way to Lord Ramchandra, and Lord Ramchandra said, you can't do that with this present incarnation. You have to wait till I appear as Krishna. And then they became the Munichara gopis who associated with Krishna. So there's all sorts of varieties of coward boyfriends. But they're not... I mean, in one sense, every jiva soul is an expansion of Krishna. You know, Mami Vamsa Jiva Lupe Jiva Bhuta Sanatana technically is called Vibhinamsa, part and parcel of Krishna. But we're not Vishnu Tattva, we're parts and parcels. Okay. Abhimanyu is empowered, yes. Empowered incarnation. And the coward boys are definitely empowered incarnations. Empowered. I mean,
Abhimanyu, an expansion of Krishna? Radharani's so-called husband?
Yes, expansion material. He's not Vishnu Tattva. Definitely not Vishnu Tattva. Yeah, he is empowered, but he's definitely not Vishnu Tattva. I can guarantee that. So, Mr. Gopal, you have a question.
Please accept my obeisances, Shri Gurudev.
Yeah.
Regarding the demigods, Krishna is, Akura is speaking, and then Prabhupada gives the purport here. And then yesterday we were speaking on Bhagavad Gita about those who worship the demigods are in the mode of goodness. And yet it's like the demigods themselves are, it seems even primarily in the mode of passion, because all of their activity they're doing for the fruits. And then also they're always engaged in fighting with the demons, and there's
So what I said when I talk about the mode of goodness, the material mode of goodness is actually contaminated with passion and ignorance. They're just prominent primarily in goodness. When we talk about they're in the mode of goodness, if they're not pure devotees, then the mode of goodness is mixed with other modes.
But as far as their associating with the demigods, as far as worshiping or...
Sometimes they fall into different modes. But, you know, but at least those in the mode of goodness, they respect the Vedic injunctions for worshiping the demigods. In other words, they follow Shastra.
I see.
That's the point.
Thank you, Gurudev.
Okay, so, and I think Jagat had a question. He was going to...
Yes, I did. The gopis are always selfless. So can you explain their statements, especially about the girls of Mathura in terms of selflessness? And also it seems they're oblivious to the fact that Krishna is going to save the world, basically.
That's actually good. Well, in terms of selfishness, there is this anger, which is one of the indirect rasas. And they're very angry with Krishna. This is part of the relationship. It's not actually selfishness. They're trying to give pleasure to Krishna. And it's hard to imagine how in this material world, if someone is envious or someone is angry at someone else, they're actually angry at destiny or providence, as described here, which is not different from Krishna. That's actually a very good question. So, but basically, their intention is to give happiness to Krishna. And they may be thinking that they can give more happiness than the women in Mathura. Of course, they do lament that Krishna will forget us when he meets the women in Mathura. I mean, there is that particular statement. So it's part of the ras that gives pleasure to Krishna. Their intention is to give pleasure to Krishna. Now, the second question is, weren't they concerned with the world? You know, here's all these people being tortured. And, you know, isn't it pretty selfish to think, you know, I want to be with Krishna. The hell with the world. Well, their love for Krishna was so intense that they blot that out of their minds. It's just like they blocked it out of their minds completely because their love and desire to please Krishna was so intense. And basically, they understood, as we read in the prayers previously, that Krishna had these powers, and of course they saw Krishna manifest all these powers. They could be thinking Krishna could kill Kamsa, because they understand he's God, and he's up to Kama. He could kill Kamsa without leaving Vrindavan. You know, because obviously they have some knowledge which manifests from time to time, unless it becomes overcome by their intense bhavas or intense emotions. So, you know, I'm not going to guess to see what the guests had, what the gopis were actually thinking, you know, whether they were ignoring the plight of the world. However, we do know that they were so overcome with love and emotional attachment for Krishna that that really took over their consciousness. So it's not that they were cruel or heartless, not thinking of the plight of the world. Actually, it's a good question. Yeah, in other words, why do they be self-sacrificing and say, Krishna, you should go take care of this. You know, these Vasudeva, Devaki, and the Yadu dynasty, they're being tortured and the whole world is suffering. And also, another point is that that was also mixed with their desire to protect Krishna. Because sometimes they saw him, even though they had this knowledge, the knowledge got covered by their intense love, they didn't want to see Krishna put in a dangerous situation. They were scared for Krishna's welfare. I mean, just like you have when Vasudeva and Devaki first saw Krishna, he saw him with four arms. You know, he's God. But still, because of that maternal affection and paternal affection, they were concerned with Krishna's safety. So you see, it's, you know, like mixed emotions. They actually felt this great paternal. They knew he was God. He showed he was God. I mean, there's a case where, you know, you have a kid, and before he appears as your little baby, he shows his four hands. And so they should have just thought, you know, he's God, he can handle it himself, right? You know, he has four arms, he has all these, the symbols, the chakra, and the club, and the disc, and the lotus flower. Whoops, what happened with my camera? Hold on a second. Where this camera is, sometimes it goes out of focus. Anyway, so better not to see me. So, but still, he proved he was God to them, and because the maternal and paternal affection was so strong, they were still worried. Does that make sense?
Yes, really great, Dave.
Okay, good question. Actually, these are really deep, intelligent questions. Okay, we have to end now. Thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada is so merciful to give us this highest knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, we are so fortunate. And we are assured, according to Krishna in the Gita, of a future birth that is very auspicious, or going back to Godhead, or being born in a family of transcendentalists. We are assured of that by Prabhupada's mercy. Wow. Okay, thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, on that happy note, we will end. All glories to do His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. We'll see everybody tomorrow, same time, same place.